Blog Talk Radio.
Your Atlanta Falcons just signed a new quarterback. Who is it and why? This and more on the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. And that's right. Welcome in to the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. I'm your host, Jeremy the Impact York, joined once again by the coach, Haywood Hill. How you doing, coach?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. Luckily, we've got a little bit of a weather break here lately, and I don't feel like I'm burning to death.
Absolutely.
Although the heat wave is still going to come, you know, I'll take what I can get. But tons we got to get into. Well, not tons, but some pretty bigger things going on. Wanted to make sure we got brought to everybody's attention. Kind of maybe explain these and the way we see them and everything. Obviously, Reggie's out on assignment. We look forward to getting him back by in a couple weeks. We're not sure if we're going to do a show next week or not because the Falcons' last preseason game is on Thursday. So. You know, obviously, any of our listeners, just pay attention to the Facebook and Twitter feed and any other way that you follow us. More than likely, we'll just take next week off and start up fresh with the season. But, getting right into it, I think we'll get right into the first topic here. And don't be alarmed, we've actually added a few sounds to the soundboard here. So if one accidentally goes off, don't be too alarmed there, Coach.
Okay.
We're going to start off with, it's kind of been talked about a little bit already, but obviously people haven't heard from us on it. Apparently, back in 2014 at the Rookie Symposium for the NFL, Hall of Famer Chris Carter made a statement similar to, I'm going to paraphrase, that everybody needs a fall guy. So that in case things do not necessarily go your way, you need somebody to be holding the bag, so to say, or somebody that kind of would take the fall for whatever legality you got into so that you could continue to make money in the league. Have you ever heard of a veteran or a coach or even an agent make this kind of statement to a player?
I cannot say personally that I've heard that. I think what Mr. Carter was trying to say is that you need to surround yourself with people that if a situation gets bad, they can help you basically get out of it, whether that's talk to you, whether that's see something ahead of time. Players, I think sometimes what happens is that people forget that they're human beings. They do make mistakes, but also they are public figures. And so they have to be mindful when they enter into any environment, whether it's a home, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's an entertainment spot, a hotel, wherever they are, they immediately are in an environment that can go from 0 to 1,000. And that can be positive or negative, depending on the environment. So, again, I think what he was speaking from a perspective of a player. I don't think he meant it in any way to harm or to suggest negatively to any players in the league, this is what should be happening in the way that it should be happening. I think he was just talking openly about things that he might have experienced personally or things that he has seen with his own two eyes just in situations.
Well, I mean, he's even said that I believe it was the Eagles was actually where he was drafted and started his career, speaking of Chris Carter, and that he said playing for Buddy Ryan that he was cut. And it was really one of the first times in his life he had been cut, and it made him kind of reevaluate where he was in life and in his life, and it made him straighten up and make better decisions, and that's what this kind of reminded him of. It just didn't quite come out the way he intended it. He wasn't saying, no, you can continue to be, a street hooligan and do everything you want. Just make sure one of your buddies takes a rap for it. He was just kind of trying to get across, I think, that you try to make the best decisions you can, and I guess if something does happen, that it is better if somebody else holds the bag.
Well, without speaking with him directly, at this point, I'm sure it's been addressed several times already. And I'm sure that he's made a statement that surely shored up what he was trying to say or what he wanted to convey.
Definitely so. I agree. And Chris is a good guy. And the odd thing about this is there was another Hall of Famer that was in the room at the time before his life kind of come unraveled, and that was Warren Sapp, who just smiled and nodded when he said that.
Quite interesting.
Yeah, that's an interesting duo for one, but I know that Chris and Warren are actually friends, especially because they were did a lot of the same football analysis up until, obviously, Warren decided to take other priorities. But, yeah, I thought it was all kind of weird, and as I told you, Chris Borland, who recently retired from the San Francisco 49ers after 1 year in the league, he said it was because of injuries and just, you know, he didn't want to get dinged up like everybody did pretty much. He was trying to watch his body a little more. In an interview with Sports Illustrated, it was an unnamed Hall of Famer, according to what he said. And then once this video that I believe is still on NFL.com, it's been up for that long from the symposium. And he only said it to the NFC guys, so I don't know what speech the AFC guys got or who talked to them there, but I reached out to Ross Tucker, who does a lot of – he was a journeyman lineman. He does a lot of media stuff as well, and he goes to the symposiums every year. I kind of reached out to him to see if he could tell me who did the AFC speech, but I haven't heard back yet.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how it all turns out, but I think that – the NFL has a way of making sure that it's under control. And again, I think he was just speaking, you know, from a player's perspective. I don't think he had any intention of trying to harm anyone in what he was saying. He was just speaking as a player.
Right. And of course, that'll all get ironed out. And, you know, Chris will be on TV still on ESPN. And you know, everybody will move on from this. I think it was blown up a little bit more than it should have. And, you know, nobody took it seriously. But moving on, we're going to move on to what I think is the top injury so far during the preseason, and we'll get into the second one and third one, I believe, a little bit later on. But that would be Jordy Nelson, the number one wide receiver for Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. And, of course, you know a lot more about the Packers than I do for various reasons. And not only is Jordy number one on their team, I think he's a top three receiver in this league. Now, we were talking before about this next man up mentality because they don't like to sign free agents in Green Bay. Who are kind of the next guys up as far as taking over the number two and number three spots?
Well, I think Quarters will step up. I think they have some guys that they're evaluating right now currently in camp. I do say that this is a tremendous loss, because Jordy most definitely demands your attention as the defensive coordinator on the field. However, it's professional sports, and these injuries will happen. And, again, they pay for professionals. A lot of work goes into the scouting department, film work, tracking players. Players are now more prepared coming out of college, I think, than ever before. As we can see with guys immediately with the rookie classes that have come in the last 2 to 3 years, i.e. Russell Wilson and some of those other guys, as you can see that they're very well prepared and they come out and they play. So, again, it's always nice when you have that continuity, you have that relationship with receiver and quarterback. But, again, it won't change the fact that Jordy Nelson will not play this year. So, at this point, it's a team sport. The next guy that's in line will step up and will perform, and or they will find someone that will. And that's just the nature of being a professional, and most definitely in professional sports.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. A few quick notes on that. It seems like every year the Packers are hit with a prime player that gets injured. And I'm not going to say it has to do with their condition or anything, because I know it's top-notch. I actually have talked to people on that front line, as you have as well. Is it just bad luck that it seems like every year it's either, you know, Jordy Nelson, or it's one of the offensive linemen, or It's been their top safety. It's been Aaron Rodgers for a handful of games.
Well, no, I think that it's just been one of those situations where you just, you know, guys play beat up. The seasons are long, and your success shows in an extended season called the playoffs and hopefully to obtain the sports grail called the Super Bowl. I think that's the biggest piece of it. I think that, you know, football now is a year-round profession. It's no longer you prepare, you know, maybe a month or two before training camp, and then you go into camp and those grueling hours that you spend, you know, just going through your fundamentals and going over plays and just, you know, banging into bodies. Now it is year-round that you have to have yourself prepared because you have a lot of more OTAs, a lot of other things that are on the plate now for an NFL player. So, again, if you look around the league, everyone suffers this. It's not a matter of if, it's just when that injury will occur. And that's why you just have to be ready. I mean, at this point now, you know, the motto is if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. So that's where players are now. And, you know, unfortunately, some guys go down that you hoped, and I'm sure it's just really ripping up the fantasy league right now, that you hope will be playing. But then also you get a lot of pleasant surprises. And players get, you know, getting that opportunity right now to prove that this is why they're in the NFL and why they should, you know, also command and or demand attention.
Yeah, on the fantasy note, Jordy has been a staple on my team for the last couple of years. So last night during the draft, I did say a small prayer and shed a small tear when his name come up, and I knew I could not pick him.
I'm sure you and a lot of other guys.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, and I've even explained this to a couple players I've met, fantasy is exactly that to me. It's just fun and games on the side. You know, all kidding aside, Jordy Nelson is one of my favorite players to watch because he just brings something to the table that a lot of other guys don't. And, you know, he's still young. He'll rebound from this and everything. It just kind of bad timing again, as we like to talk about. But if they are looking for some wide receivers they might want to look at, I may be a little biased in saying I do know a handful of some pretty good wideouts and defensive backs that can swap over that played for a little indoor team in Texas that we also cover here. So if you hear anything, let me know. I can maybe slide you some information.
Okay, I'm sure we'll hear.
I'm sure they'll appreciate the shout out there. Next thing we did want to get to, though, and it's something that's been talked about, and it seems to get more serious and more serious every time that I've inquired to people about it and every time that we've all talked about it. It's the fact that the NFL needs and is also working towards having a spring and or summer developmental league. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, again, since the league decided to disband, and I'm using that word loosely, NFL Europe, for various reasons, I think they most definitely need it. Again, if you notice early in the segment, I said that, you know, it's now becoming a year-round sport.
Right.
And so now it gives you an opportunity to kind of extend your roster by having guys play in a developmental league that can be allocated down like they did with NFL Europe. You need those guys need more live game situations. And although they practice well and they are very knowledgeable with their plays, the unfortunate piece of it is that you cannot simulate live game unless you're playing in the game. And so, again, it gives them an opportunity to assess the talent that they have, and again, it also helps them expand their roster. So, again, it's nothing different that you don't see in baseball. We have three different farm league systems, from A to AA to AAA. So, again, I think it's much needed. I think it's just finding the right environment to keep it stateside this time. I think that's probably one of the biggest issues that you run into, trying to find time to play football and to not necessarily make it profitable, but make it where it's sustainable. Because at that time of the year, you're talking about baseball being, you know, seasons are coming in, and you're talking about those 180 games, and how do you find your place where you can do this and not overlap too much to where you don't have the attendance or you don't have the interest.
Right, yeah, absolutely. This kind of stuff has got to happen. And I actually think there should be a spring and summer. I think it should be There should be one before the draft so that you can evaluate either the guy, your practice squad guys or your third and fourth string guys from the end of the season to kind of see what you have, a guy that didn't, like you said, get the reps. And then, obviously, I think there should be a small segment, maybe even a two-part season even, for all that matters. And the second part to be after the draft so that if you're the Tennessee Titans or if you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and you want to see, hey, I just drafted Mariota. I want to see in those game-like situations where he's going to be at.
Yeah, and you see it in basketball. They have, you know, they have a summer league. They have the D-League. So, I mean, it's only going to be feasible that the NFL drafts a plan, and I'm sure they have a plan in place. It's just a matter of when they want to execute that plan and to bring back some type of spring and or summer league.
Well, and especially during the quote-unquote off-season from college and pro football. I mean, obviously the indoor leagues are playing during the summer, so there's that. But there's a lot of markets and a lot of places they could put teams that not only keep the football interest high, but the NFL stands to make a substantial amount of money along with the owners. You know, put a team in Oklahoma, put a team in North Texas, put a team in Alabama, put a team in Southern Missouri or something like that. You could keep it all right around that area, and it seems like, you know, the money's there.
I agree. I think that if you went into – I think Mobile, Alabama would be an excellent place to put a team. They most definitely could facilitate them. As you spoke of North Texas, they have areas there. So there are areas within inside the U.S. that are huge at football – that could support a team that doesn't have an NFL team, and yet you don't find yourself putting a new franchise there in the hopes that it will sustain itself over time. But you can now at least look at the market, offer something to that market, and see how that turns out without risk.
Exactly. And I do think this is going to happen sooner rather than later. I haven't heard enough. I mean, for one, in places like Mobile and North Texas, Oklahoma, those kind of places, the stadiums are already there. Most of the time, you could probably talk to the local bigger colleges there about using their facilities, and they'll easily, you know, they can make that work.
Yeah, and I think that you have to look at these particular developmental leagues as leagues where you don't have a lot of games. I would not probably go over maybe six games.
Right.
With this, so that way you're not in a position where you are overlapping with a lot of the things that they have going on with the college programs in the summer. So I think if you can reduce this down to a 5-6 game season, four teams within a regional area, I think it can be pulled off. And as the interest begins to grow and you need to add an additional game or two, you can do so. And therefore, you know the players are not beat up too much before training camp, but yet you got enough games. And kind of like how you do in preseason right now. Gives you enough opportunity to see them plus the preseason.
Now, do you think these the games and outcomes need to mean anything? As in, you know, if they play six games and let's say two playoff games, just take the top four teams and have them play each other, that maybe the teams that make the championship get the first Sunday night home opener or get some sort of reward for doing well?
Well, no, I don't think it'll go that far. I think what you want to do here with a league, with a summer league, and as I've just kind of laid out some schematics for this. You want to see players. You want to see players in live situations with more reps, and also gives you an opportunity to start developing your position coaches. That's a great opportunity for them as well to step in into some coordinator positions down at that level, as well as some head coaching positions to see how well they have learned the system and learned how to manage the game. Themselves, you can't see that as, you know, if you're the DB coach with aspirations of becoming a defensive coordinator or a linebacker coach with aspirations of becoming a defensive coordinator or O-line coach or running back coach or receivers coach that has aspirations of becoming a coordinator or head coach. So I think it gives a great opportunity for a lot of your coordinators to come down that are rising coordinators, because every year you have this short list or this long list of candidates that are looking at a head coaching spot. But a lot of times I feel personally that some of those jobs are missed just because they lack the live game experience, not the experience of being able to coach.
Right. And also you can look at game officials as far as getting almost the tryout factor, or to just, you know, maybe somebody that's not been a game official for a couple years, or somebody who's trying to be a ball official, as important as that'll be this year, that they got a six-game kind of tryout or to get your feet back wet, get in the groove of it again to see if you want to do it.
Absolutely. And I think, and again, NFL Europe was big in Europe. The only problem that was happening with NFL Europe over time is that they wanted year-round football. They wanted those players was inside the community, and because they were really not from there, a lot of the players outside, the ones that play club ball there in Europe, that was the biggest setback over time for the NFL. But again, you saw players, a lot of players develop in NFL Europe, and a lot of players come to the NFL and perform well as a result of having that experience.
Yeah, I think this is definitely something we'll continue to talk about, at least for probably most of this season as we hear more and more about it. But at least we're all in agreement, because I know we've spoken to Reggie about this too. We're all in agreement that this kind of thing needs to happen, because there is that small gray area where you're unsure of a player, or you just want to see what you actually have in him to see if he's worth keeping around.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why you have so many OTAs now, is because what happens after the draft is that a lot of those guys that are drafted from maybe fourth round down are now competing against those third and fourth. Players on the depth chart, or third or fourth players on the depth chart, I've never used that term. And they're competing for that job. So now the OTA, again, is a small window to evaluate the player, but again, it doesn't give you the game simulation that you really would hope for. It's just basically giving you, you know, going through scenarios and plays. But if you can create a league with about five games, six games max, then that's enough time for you to be able to see it prior to going to camp. Plus, keep in mind that those same players that you are now elevating or pulling down on the depth chart, you can now see them in an additional four games through training camp. So now you can pretty much set your roster the way you want to, because you have enough to see now. I remember at one time there was talks about NFL extending into two extra games for the season, which again, you know, if you got this league, you have that to look at in a sense, you know, so that way you can kind of just kind of plug and play guys and just see where they are against the live game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad that the NFL has gotten to where they're more proactive than reactive nowadays. They see that this could only benefit them. There's not a lot of detractions to it, and they're actually, you know, moving up the talks on it.
Now, and that's going to be great for a lot of players. It's going to open up the doors for a lot of players that did not get drafted, a lot of undrafted players, and players they wanted to draft and see but just could not make the moves in the roster to get them on, to be able to give them opportunities as well.
Absolutely. And as we move on to the next topic we're going to get to, it happens to be the number two biggest injury so far, in my opinion. And that would be the center for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Marquise Pouncey. I don't remember exactly what it was. I believe it's a broken ankle, but I know it involves his ankle, and he's out the rest of the year. How big is this injury to the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Well, it's huge when you're speaking of a quarterback's relationship to his offensive line. His offensive line quarterback is the center. So it's huge when you're talking about quarterback-center exchange. The continuity there is just as strong as it is with a quarterback and his number one receiver and number one running back. So Pouncey has faced injuries for the last, you know, I think 2 years. It's been really tough on him. He's very resilient. He's a tough player. He does everything he can to bounce back after these injuries. Hopefully it's not a broke ankle, but if it's been confirmed and he's out for the season as a result of it, you know, it's going to be really tough. But hopefully he has instilled into the guy that's right behind him. And you saw it in Atlanta last year. If you think about Stone, who rose to the occasion. Again, you know, these are the things that happen. And, you know, if there is a nice way to say it, and it's always tough because it's a mouthful to swallow, if you will, those type of injuries, it's best that they happen now so that you can go ahead and prepare a guy now. The worst injuries are when you get them late in the season, as when you looked at Green Bay and what happened to Aaron and how he struggled with, you know, even though he was resilient, you know, I don't know if they'd have made the Super Bowl. I think you have to cut his leg off it by that point. I mean, you know, it's just things like that. It's never questioning the player's integrity, nor is it always question the player's toughness. or approach toward the game, because they're all warriors. They all go out and play very hard. But I think if an injury is going to happen, if it happens early, it gives you an opportunity to evaluate quickly, make the moves faster, and prepare the guys, you know, better, especially from that quarterback, because he needs to make sure that center knows everything on the line and can make those adjustments quickly, so they have to do a lot of practice and build that relationship.
Right, exactly. And you've been around the Pittsburgh, all those guys up there. Are they one to want to try to make a move and trade for somebody or sign somebody, or is this going to be like Green Bay and just next guy up mentality?
Well, I think that they, you know, again, when you look at the contracts and you look at how the rookie contracts have worked over the last couple of years, I think they have someone in place. I don't know how comfortable they are with it, but then again, this is why they go through these scenarios. They, you know, what you don't see as a fan is all of the preparation that takes place behind the scenes and behind closed doors, not only in the classroom and classroom setting, so from the cerebral piece of it, but also in the physical practice. So trust me, they moved a lot of guys around. They put a lot of guys in different positions. They've gone over a lot of scenarios. We call it scenario, basically. We actually say that you're out. You got hurt in the game. You just went down. Then here's the next guy. We're making line adjustments. So all of these things are taking place. It's just that the public doesn't see them. So trust me, they looked at this, and they spent countless of hours looking at all of the situations and looking at all of the injury reports day-to-day in training camp, as if we lose someone, what's next and who's next?
Yeah, exactly. And it's weird that I've spoken to so many Steeler fans, that especially in the area. Apparently Atlanta and Orlando are big places for Steeler fans. That's where I've met the biggest concentrations of them as far as down here in the South. But I was just explaining the other day that they should be good. As far as I said, you know, the next guy will come in and he'll still be solid. He may not be pouncy, but he'll still be solid. And then it was handed down just a couple hours ago that, is it Martavius Bryant, I believe, their number two wide receiver, is fighting an appeal right now for a 4-game suspension for the substance abuse policy. So on the opening game of the year, Pittsburgh could be missing their starting center, their number two wide receiver, and their starting running back. And then on the flip side, the New England Patriots may be missing their starting quarterback and their starting running back. I mean, this game is taking on a whole new life now.
Absolutely. And then if you look at what Pittsburgh did with Michael Vick, you know, they brought Mr. Vick in. And again, that the question now has to be, you know, how healthy is Ben Roethlisberger right now? Are there some concerns? You know, they're making insurance policies right now. And again, you know, Vic, I've heard a lot of controversy behind this. You know, some people, I'm not going to be a Steeler fan. You know, if Michael Vick makes this roster, if you're a fan, you're a fan, whether, you know, Mr. Vick is there or not. But again, you know, these are the things that they're looking at. And that is, again, that's a great analogy that you just brought about for both of the teams and how they're preparing for that week one meeting. So, again, you know, a lot of guys get opportunities now. So when you hear players, and you won't hear it openly, but when you hear players kind of grumble or gripe, they're not getting the reps. And, you know, now you get more reps than you anticipated. So now,
right,
did you prepare yourself to step in and start at any given moment?
Right. And obviously they brought in Michael Vick and signed him to make up for Bruce Gradkowski, who dislocated his finger and had to have surgery on it. He's one of their backup quarterbacks. But I just want to bring up something somebody brought up early this morning. It was kind of a snarky comment, but at the same time, it was quite coincidental that Michael Vick was brought into Pittsburgh and signed, and I believe the day after he was signed was National Dog Day.
Well, again, you know, that's just a play on the situation, and again, you know, I don't know what led to the acquisition of signing him as a free agent, but, you know, the fact that he's there speaks volumes to his ability to still play the game, and he still commands, you know, contracts. So, you know, I hope everything works out for Mr. V. I think that's a healthy pickup when you consider that, you know, what was behind, you know, Mr. Roethlisberger last year, and had he gone out for four games, where would they have been?
Exactly, and I don't read much into that. For one, I don't get why, at least the United States, we have to have a national something every day. I think people just make them up just so they can hashtag it on Twitter. But, yeah, the fact that he was signed says what we've all kind of been thinking anyway. Does he still have it to play? And I think his natural ability, which is what's gotten him this far, because he's never been one to study a playbook all that much. He's not very much into reading defenses. That was always kind of the knock. But his natural ability puts him so much further ahead of everybody else that when he's 100%, he's still almost in video game mode. Does things that only you can do on a video game.
Well, taking consideration now that you lost Pouncey, and Roethlisberger is a pocket quarterback, he doesn't have a lot of mobility. So how many hits can he truly take this year standing in the pocket, because the game is so much faster? Let's look at the combine. Linebackers ran sub-4.4s, you know, low 4.5s this year consistently. So how many hits can Roethlisberger take over the course of the year? Even though he's big, he's strong, he's powerful, he still has a cannon for an arm. But now the game is changing. It's with a lot more complex defenses, with a lot more speed. How many of those hits can he take in the pocket with a center now that's not Pouncey, okay? Again, we're not putting any knock on the center that's coming in now. But, again, he has to learn and adapt to all of this at the snap of the ball. How much is that going to affect Ben Roethlisberger? And then now you bring a Vic in who has the ability to still escape the pocket and bring the athleticism, and maybe can calm down the line and help take that pressure off when those types of situations occur.
Exactly. To use an example from the Christian Bible, it only took one hit to take Goliath down. It doesn't matter how many times you get hit, and Big Ben is one of the guys who is very good at getting out of trouble and taking big hits. It only takes one.
That is true.
But hopefully everybody stays healthy from here on out, and hopefully all these other guys get better because we want to see them play. But moving on to our next one, there's a report that between Peyton Manning and his doctors, it's been known that he wakes up most mornings with no feeling in his fingertips. To me, I don't know. Like you said, I think this is Father Time finally catching up here, and that neck injury is finally showing some signs. I really, you know, I told you about there's a pro wrestler in the WWE that is currently on the shelf because of a similar thing. He has numbness in his hands, and he's always had shoulder trouble. But between his neck and shoulder, he's got numbness and no real feeling sometimes in his fingers. You think Peyton can continue to play like this, or is he going to have to maybe consider riding into the sunset?
Well, I mean, we always knew that the neck was an issue, and we're not quite sure, because we don't know all of the intricate details of how he's attached to them right now as far as physicals are concerned, and the fusions and the operations he's taken over the years. But it's a clear indicator that this probably will be his last year. I mean, in my opinion, and again, I'm no medical doctor, but, you know, if you're feeling tingling in your hand, that means that there's sensation in the arm, shoulder, and has to route back to the neck. So, again, if it's that far down in his hands and he doesn't even feel his fingers, you know, what risks are involved now? You know, what true risks are involved in him playing? And, again, I think that's what the Colts looked at when they had to make their move. I don't think they ever wanted to get rid of Peyton Manning. I think they wanted him to retire a Colt. However, we knew about this injury. It's not a secret. But now, has it caught up with him finally is the question. And is he pushing himself a little too hard at this point? You know, I'm more so concerned about his safety and his health than whether or not he wants to finish, you know, at a particular level, numbers-wise.
Right. And, I mean, Kubiak is – if he'll listen to Kubiak this year, that system should take them pretty far. But Peyton's always been one to kind of have his own agenda as the way he wanted to run things. So, I mean, you know, it just comes down to me if he wants to not only continue to play and try to play at the best level as long as his body's going to hold up, if he wants to keep accumulating stats or if he wants to win a championship. And that's it's just pretty much up to Peyton Manning, I think, the whole Broncos season.
Yeah, I agree. And they're probably going to get the backup quarterback some plays in the game, which allows us to take some of the pressure off of Peyton Manning down after down or series after series.
Yeah, I think in what's arguably called in sports as garbage time, if you're up big, if you're down big, if it's a minute before halftime, put Brock Osweiler out there and let him throw a few passes.
Yeah, you don't want to find yourself in a situation where you have to play with a quarterback or any player that doesn't get an opportunity to get in the game at some point just to get the live game.
Exactly. And from one quarterback issue to I guess for now I'm going to call it the number three injury of the preseason so far, and that would be RG3. I believe he has been cleared as of there was an update a minute ago. Let me see if I can pull it up. An independent neurologist has cleared quarterback Robert Griffin III to play Saturday's game at Baltimore. Wow. As a fan of Baltimore, and given that we're going to talk about Terrell Suggs here in a minute, I don't know that I would play Robert Griffin this Saturday.
I wouldn't. I think at this point he's shown enough. You know what he's capable of. I mean, if you put him in for a series or so at best, just to see his decision-making based on the fact that he's been cleared after such a hit, to see if everything is intact and he's seeing the field like he needs to see the field. But I would most definitely limit his play. I mean, he probably see no more than three or four series for me the whole entire game. And that wouldn't necessarily all be in the first quarter or even the first half. Maybe a series each quarter, you know, four downs and that's it, and you're out just enough to see, you know, you progress throughout the game and throughout the quarters. But I do agree that if it's possible to rest him, just do so and make sure that you're comfortable in other areas and more especially at the backup.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, the way he got injured was, well, he took a few hits in the game anyway, but he was trying to evade the pocket and ran forward, fumbled the ball, jumped on it, and then his players jumped on the pile to try to jar it loose. He got a concussion, which he had about 1,000 pounds of linemen on him, so it's understandable. He actually stayed down for over 3 minutes, I believe, before kind of slowly pulling himself towards the sideline. It was kind of scary.
Yeah, and any time you see that, that's the first thing that runs through your mind, especially with all of the concussion issues that players have faced over the years in the NFL and those end results. You must definitely have to be very cautious with those type of things. But I think that the league also will come up with something through competition about the piling on of those bodies.
Right.
I think, you know, yes, it's a physical sport, and yes, everybody, but once you're two or three bodies on top, then four or five bodies only add to other injuries, if not possibly the collapsing of a lung or the breaking of a rib or a puncturing of a lung or an internal bleeding. Just a lot of things can go wrong. And I think that's a blind spot with inside the NFL that people don't think about. So, again, I think that they'll do something a little bit different as a result of what they saw in that game. You're going to see something here in the season that'll help curtail a lot of the pile on.
Yeah, I think that is another rule they need to address because, I mean, pretty much once the first or second guy jumps on, there's no need for anybody else. It pretty much plays dead at that point.
I think it'll be something similar to the Halo rule. I think they'll come up with something like that. You know, once you, like you said, once you have two or three players that are engaged and that on a fumble and it's the players are, you know, pretty much even, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, then at that point, they won't allow it to, you know, become a thing where the whole teams are piling on top of each other at that point.
Exactly. And, you know, maybe that's, like you said, maybe that's the next rule they need to address so that this doesn't happen. Because when you pile on like that, especially when those linemen are involved, it's real easy to roll up on a lineman or for somebody's leg to get under there. I mean, this time it was somebody's head, which is really bad. But, you could easily have anything snap right there.
Yeah, you're talking about arms, you're talking about ribs, you're talking about necks. You're talking about a lot of things. You know, once you got that much pressure, the body can only hold up so much.
It's definitely true. And let's see. I thought I'd seen another update. Yeah, it's been passed down that the Browns announced Johnny Manziel is going to miss the last two preseason games with elbow soreness. I don't think that means much because I didn't see him start the season as the quarterback. I feel like it was going to be Josh McCown that's up there? Yeah, Josh McCown. And then when Johnny's ready, they're going to flip him in. They're pretty much playing for next year anyway.
Right, correct.
But I saw that come through. Figured I'd mention that. Got a couple more things on End Zone, then we'll jump into some Falcons news and let everybody on to their day because I believe there's a game later on tonight. I'm not sure which one. I haven't been able to see yet. But anyway, Cam Chancellor has said he's going to hold out and has held out up to this point. Anything Seahawks related, he feels like it's his turn to get paid. As much as I agree with this, because of the Russell Wilson and the linebacker's name that I just forgot. But in paying those, they already had to release one of their starting linemen. So if they pay Cam Chancellor, there may be four or five more guys having to get released. I think he's just stuck having to play out his contract.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think what happened was that all these guys were given a reward called a contract extension. That they could take or not take right after the Super Bowl. And with that, some guys decided to play the Vegas odds, as I like to call it, and invest in themselves. They took a gamble. And those that did not sign after the Super Bowl did not find themselves locked into a contract. So really, he could be an easy runner right now. I do understand where he's coming from as a player. But in the same token,
and I think we lost Coach there for a second. We'll get him back on the line. I'm gonna try to update you on some other things until we get him back on the line. Obviously, as I said, there is a game tonight, I believe. I believe that is there's Coach. And do we have you back on, Coach?
Yes, you do. You do. Okay. And as I was saying, going back to Chandler's situation in Seattle, you know, you have a 3-year deal with them now. And, you know, again, if you look at Russell Wilson, he held out as a result and took a chance, took a huge chance on what his productivity was going to be, you know, after that as he played out his rookie contract, which was, you know, relatively long. I think he had a 5-year deal as a rookie. So with that being said and done, you know, you have to just kind of see where you are with some things. And if, you know, if he decides to be traded over the next year or sit out this year, I don't know how that would benefit him. But at this point, he needs to continue to play for his market value. So, you know, yes, I see his point, but in the same token, this is what you agreed to over, you know, over a year ago for a 3-year deal. So that's where you went for what was now versus what was possibly futuristic for you. And that was nothing was wrong with that in securing yourself that way. However, you know, again, you know, that's why you have agents who sit down and meticulously deal with the GM and go back and forth over the numbers, which then solidifies where you are and what you can get done. I still think that even 2-3 years from now, he'll still have that, you know, a strong value, you know, as he takes care of his body and he continues to make plays. But again, you know, it's just one of those things that happens. You roll the dice and it works out sometimes, and sometimes you just take what's behind door number two and you go with that.
Yeah, exactly so. And as we move on to our last topic here at End Zone, Coach, I'll describe a play, and I'll see if you agree with me, and we'll go with it on there. All right. The quarterback, you know, the play is called, the center hands it to the quarterback. The quarterback has both hands on the ball, turns to the running back, sticks it in his gut, and turns to look. That's called a read option, is it not?
Well, that basically, if he keeps the ball, I mean, basically you're looking at a play-action play.
Right.
You're starting to see more and more quarterbacks now delay in that pulling of the ball out
if the running back takes it, it's just basically a delayed draw. And if the quarterback keeps it, play action can be ran, you know, offhand, or it can be put in there and held long enough, and then if he sticks it and holds it for a second and then pulls it, you're talking about rerun option at that point. So it's just different terminology that's used depending on the offense that you are running. You know, if you're running spreads, you're looking at rerun more so. And then, you know, if you're running your traditional, you know, eye formations, it's based on formation. And then you're looking at play action passing that comes out of that. So it's just a play on words depending on the offense that you're using. But basically, fundamentally, the play is designed to do the same thing.
Well, but you'd at least agree that that particular play, whether it's called the read option or not, has become more popular over the last few years to where a lot of teams are using it.
Yes, because you're having quarterbacks that are coming out of more of a rerun option type of style, which are freezing up linebackers. That's why linebackers' market value went up over the last 2 years. And now you look at, you know, these guys that are going to be hybrid defensive end linebackers for the very purpose of the rerun option. So now, Auburn is very big at running it in the college. You see a lot of it in Georgia Southern, in triple option. Georgia Tech run something similar.
Right.
So, again, it helps, but now you're getting linebackers and defensive. You're getting linebackers who are now hybrid defensive ends. And so now with that, that's going to help curtail a lot of that, because now you got two guys that are going to be sub 4-4 guys. Whether you pull it and pitch it or keep it and run it, you're going to have, you know, a force to be reckoned with on the ends now. So I think they found an answer to it this year. I think you're going to see a lot with Philadelphia that way. You're going to see a lot of it. And if you notice, you know, you're just going to start to see a lot of the defenses this year are going to be so fast, it's going to be almost like a blur. So now trying to pull reruns is going to be probably negotiated with a quick screen game, a lot of quick screens to the outside to help take that off. Because when you can't get that rerun off or the play action off quick enough now you must go to your screen game to slow down the pass rush and push it outside. So it's going to be very interesting to see how quarterbacks adjust to that are used to running that type of offense.
Well, and currently the NFL rule says that the quarterback and the hits you can put on them clearly are completely different, except during this type of play, when a quarterback pulls it out of the belly, per se, of the running back, he then becomes equal to a runner, even if he passes the ball. So, I mean, obviously, I'll put this in two perspectives in a minute. But so, obviously, it's hard to say anything about the hit Terrell Suggs put on Sam Bradford, because as soon as Bradford pulls the ball back on that particular play, he becomes a runner. So Suggs, knowing that it was a read option, could either go after the running back or the quarterback. He chose the quarterback. He could have hit him high. He could have hit him in the chest. He could have took him out at the knees or something like that, but instead he wrapped around right above his knees and rode him to the ground. To me, it looked like a clean hit. He was flagged for it. Later, the NFL said it wasn't a hit. The two perspectives I'll say, if you are the coach of Sam Bradford, do you have a problem with the hit?
Well, every coach is going to have a problem with it when his quarterback is getting hit like that. However, right. If the rule now clearly states that you become a runner, here comes two quarterbacks I like to mention, Michael Vick and Tim Tebow.
Mm-hmm.
Those are why you have those type of quarterbacks now, because they can handle that type of pressure and make a more familiar with those type of scenarios. Tim Tebow, more especially, he's a big body quarterback who's very athletic, who can run. So mm-hmm. Now you want to run the rerun option. You have him in, you have plays designed for that. Now you have to think about how you want to use him and disguise that now, because that's going to be truly tested, and that's why the quarterback market for that athlete at quarterback is now coming back into play. You got the Jameis Winston, who probably won't use a lot of that in his offensive system, but again,
right,
he's a bigger, stronger, athletic quarterback. And the pocket pass, because now pocket passing is not becoming it's not going to be a thing where you're going to get a lot of clean pockets anymore. I mean, that window is getting shorter and shorter because of the speed. I mean, they're shooting linebackers and safety is so quick in those gaps now, it's almost unbelievable how clean some of those guys come in these defenses. And I've watched it in preseason as well. A lot of these guys have come clean, and, boy, the quarterback never sees them. I mean, it's by the time he looks up, it's too late. So now rerun, play action, it's going to be a chess match this year. I think that you're going to it's really, really going to be exciting this year how the defenses respond and the offenses respond. I think you're going to start to see a lot more no huddle this year in a lot of offensive packages just because you got to come up with something to slow down the speed of these defenses this year. And, again, it's just going to be, you know, play after play after play after play. So it's going to be something to watch this year. Just stay tuned to what teams are doing to adjust to all of these things as we speak of them.
Oh, yeah. And even though the pocket passer will always, I think, have a place in the NFL, and especially nowadays, because still some of the top quarterbacks are the pocket guys, as you're saying, as the pocket is collapsing and the speed of the game, a couple of our listeners have already texted and tweeted in some other examples. Obviously, Russell Wilson is another one of those type of quarterbacks. You got Colin Kaepernick. Marcus Mariota actually has a lot of experience in the run option, read option. RG3, even though I'm not sure if he can run anymore, and, of course, Cam Newton. You need those kind of quarterbacks sometimes, even a Ben Roethlisberger or Tony Romo, somebody who can scramble like Steve Young used to get out of a collapsing pocket.
Yeah, and the thing with Roethlisberger, he's a big body, but he's not very mobile. So, that's why you have a Vic there. Now, I want people to understand that when these personnel decisions are made, they're made based on a lot of things that they see and a lot of things that are going to be playing and the durability of players. So look at how physical the game has become. Look how competitive the preseasons have been. I think I've only seen one blowout, the whole preseason. So that tells you things are going down to the last minute with a lot of these players and trying to make these teams and what they're doing. Some coaches had to reach a little deeper into their preseason playbook this year to pull out last-minute touchdowns and field goals and, defensive stand. So this year is going to be one of the most exciting years, I think, for the NFL.
Yeah, I absolutely think so. It's going to be a fun year for sure. I know we've got a lot of fun things coming up on the show and with some stuff we're going to try to hopefully do. Obviously we've reached the end of end zone. Obviously on the other side of the break we'll have Falcon Zone. It'll be me and the coach, of course. And stay tuned to the other side. We'll talk some Falcons for a little while right here on Impact Media.
Impact York from Endzone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. And I swear, every time I play that song, I feel like I can see two particular arms from Mr. Walker up in the air. No matter where he's at, it's like the bat signal. I feel like I can see Reggie with his hands in the air.
I agree.
I'm sure somewhere it is, because I think he'll always think the Falcons are on top. And we'll get into a little bit later if we think they are ourselves. But, of course, welcome to Falcon Zone, presented by Impact Media right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Jeremy the Impact York, joined once again by the coach, Haywood Hill. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Jeremy.
good to hear, obviously. Not a whole lot to talk about Falcons-wise, but some things we thought you guys should want to talk about. We'll start right off the bat easily with Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which is what it's going to be called here in Atlanta, where the ATLFC, of course, that's the Atlanta Football Club soccer team, and, of course, our hometown football team, the Atlanta Falcons, will be playing in that stadium as well. What do you think about Mercedes-Benz having their name on this stadium?
Quite interesting. It was quite interesting, Jeremy, when you take into consideration that Mercedes is a worldwide name and they already have the Superdome. So I don't think that there's anywhere else in sports history that you have a, you know, a worldwide organization like Mercedes that actually has two major cities like that. It made me right. I really thought that Coca-Cola and or Delta would be one of the forerunners, or strong forerunners, to end up getting the naming rights to the stadium because they're, you know, they're locally owned. But I guess when you consider the fact that, you know, you're going to have soccer coming in and you need some type of international brand that's recognizable. Again, that's no, that's nothing against Coca-Cola because they're worldwide as well, and they're, you know, they're heavily known as well as Delta. I just found it quite interesting, and I would be very, very interested to find out what was the final price tag on getting the bid for the name.
I'm still looking for the that final number too. But I can actually help you a little bit because I forgot the tidbit earlier when we were talking about this. Mercedes-Benz by 2017 will be more of a localized Atlanta area company. They are moving. Are either building a new facility or moving a lot of their facility, their big facility, to the Atlanta area, building a new, big new, you know, factory facility of some kind. So it's going to open right at 2017. So actually, Mercedes-Benz will be generally located, at least most of the, a lot of their business, right here in Atlanta.
Yeah, and that was quite interesting because, you know, you have Porsche now and BMW. You have a lot of people around close by. So I just found it very interesting that they were able to pull off getting, you know, two football stadium naming rights.
Yeah, and I heard a lot of Falcons fans and even some Saints fans that were, you know, a little miffed about it that, you know, being big rivals of each other, that the same company would own the stadium. And I simply, you know, I simply had the phrase for them that money talks. And the NFL is about making money, and so are all these teams and owners. And it's not just how much money, it's opportunity. And like you said, I think we've all had valid points over the last month or so about this, but the one you brought up, if you're going to have soccer, such an international sport, even though it's an MLS team, which is just nationwide, if you're going to have that international appeal to have bigger events and bigger things come to Atlanta, why not use a global brand like Mercedes-Benz?
Yeah, and that's and again, I'm just thinking from a business perspective, that
right.
might be what they looked at overall when they were looking at the future of this particular venue.
I really think that's what it is. And I think we could sit around and come up with 20 different reasons why. And I think it, I really don't know that they were the highest bidder, honestly. I feel like maybe Delta or obviously Home Depot couldn't make a bid because it'd probably be conflict of interest. But there's a lot of Atlanta-based companies that we really thought were going to make bids. Maybe they didn't. Maybe they thought they were not in the market or didn't want their name on the side of it.
Well, I can tell you what doesn't come out in the wash always comes out in the rinse. And we will most definitely hear pretty soon what the final numbers were and how they came about that decision.
Yeah, we'll get our top people on that and try to figure out exactly how much that was. Maybe we'll have it by the next show. This all brought up another point. It wasn't on the topic list, but since we're there, I've heard that Arthur Blank is going to hire a CEO to help run the football side of things. I believe as of next month, he'll be 74 years old. And he's not saying that he can't still do it and be effective in doing it, but I think he's starting to realize maybe he doesn't know everything and wants another set of eyes on the football side of things as well as maybe some of his other business ventures.
Well, I think that's smart. I think that, I mean, now that he has soccer and he has this venue, he has a lot to do in the promotion now. I think it just gives him opportunity to kind of now go out and become an ambassador not only to the, you know, to the Atlanta Falcons, but for the soccer team, but for the actual facility itself. And as he brings in business, and you know, he's going to have to take a little more time, spending time away from the day-to-day operation, so that he can focus on you know, the soccer community and you know, the NCAA and trying to get a championship there and a couple other things, the Super Bowl. So I think he has a lot of things that he wants to be able to go and fit in on those meetings and kind of spearhead and lead those committees versus just the day-to-day ops. I think that's a smart move on his part.
Yeah, and that being said, I will go ahead and make the announcement that I'm throwing my hat in the ring to Mr. Blank to be his CEO. I'm not hard to find. It's really easy to get in contact with the show. Obviously, you know, you can tweet us at Team Impact Media. I can give out my personal information if you really want it, Mr. Blank. I'm not a hard one to find. I will gladly be the CEO of the Atlanta Falcons.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, I know. I may want to watch it. It's kind of like saying you want to explore a cave and then you find a bear in it.
Correct.
But, yeah, that being said, I do think that he realizes he's got a lot on his plate, and having an extra set of eyes and an extra pair of hands to help make sure everything goes the way he wants it is always a good call, especially in this point. And, like you said, this way he can take a step back and be more of an ambassador, kind of how Vince McMahon has done with the WWE. He's kind of passed it on to his daughter and son-in-law, who are kind of running more of the day-to-day stuff. He's being able to go out, branch out, and kind of show his face more and enjoy the company he's built.
Correct.
But, let's see. I don't know how much preseason you've got to watch. I actually haven't got to watch a whole lot. Thanks to NFL Network, I get to watch replays. Like, right now they have Dallas and San Francisco. Spoiler alert on that game, if you're watching NFL Network. If you're a Dallas fan, you should probably cut the TV off. But given the preseason so far, what are you seeing out there? Are you seeing anything that, you know, catches your attention or anything we should pay attention to, or is it pretty much just everybody gearing up for the regular season?
Well, I think the biggest thing that people should be paying attention to is the level of competition. I mean, they're playing these preseason games like regular season games right now. And again, if you're starting to see the blowouts, that's only because they have now decided to pull the starters completely out of the scenario and working with, you know, the second and the third teams and, you know, the free agents. So, again, with that being said, you know, still if you go back and look overall, the competition level, there's a lot of great athletes out there this year, as it has been in the previous year. So I'm excited about seeing the regular season and how close the games are going to be. I think you're going to have a lot of very close football games all season long that it's going to come down to the fan getting their money worth, you sitting through all four quarters.
Yeah, absolutely so. And we all know that, you know, the start of week one of preseason, the start of that game, and kind of the ending game of game four are really the ones that matter for the starters. The rest of these games are about who's going to make the team, who's going to step up a level from maybe third string to second string, who's going to add depth, and just overall, you're trying to figure out what you have in some of these guys, since there is no spring or summer league.
That is correct. And so now it's boiling down to guys making the roster and filling out the rest of the depth chart. I think, you know, it's pretty much obvious the guys that are going to play, but then sometimes you find some pleasant surprises. And again, like I said, even with Atlanta last year, think about preseason, think about how Stone stepped in, and I like mentioning his name again because he's one of those journeymen who came in with, you know, just trying to make the team and did a phenomenal job at center last year for them, as well as Anton Smith, who, you know, now is taking a lot of the reps now because of injuries at running back. People now know what they can expect out of him because he's already proven himself, but had not had those opportunities last year, you know, would he even been still on the team? Who knows?
And since you mentioned the running back position, I listened to a Julio Jones interview. He was on the Rich Eisen show yesterday. when asked about the running back position, who do you think he favored, or who was the first one he mentioned, which to me means the one he likes the most? He said all three were very talented, and he would not want to be DQ, as he calls him, Coach Dan Quinn. He said he would not want to be DQ because he would have to pick between the three. But which one do you think he favors?
If I am a betting man, and I'm not, but I do play the odds, he had to go with Mr. Smith. He was already proven himself.
He did. He said Anton Smith. Yep, he said Anton Smith. It could be the familiarity thing, but he said Anton has always been a player like himself. That's why the two of them have gotten along the way they do, is that in practice, nobody is you know, everybody's working hard, but it's hard to outwork either Julio or Anton Smith because it's just, you know, pretty much balls out the whole time.
And that's what makes for a great professional. I mean, you know, again, he's proven himself. I mean, last year, whoever saw him coming out, his coming out party like he did, and only to lose him on special teams, which I thought was a tragedy. But again, you know, when you're talking about, you know, contracts and agreements that have been made, I think he would have made a huge difference in their season last year had they been able to move him to running back and let him play.
Exactly. I absolutely agree. Go ahead.
And if you don't mind me saying this, you had that same scenario last year happen in Minnesota, if you remember. They had a running back to emerge when they had the situation with Adrian Peterson being out. And again, that young man stepped right into position and played very well for Minnesota. So, you know, I think if it's left up to me, and it's not, I most definitely would start the season with Mr. Smith as my number one running back. There's just no question he would start as my one.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And even if you did a committee of the three of them, but the guy you're talking about in Minnesota, I believe, was Talafiero, and then, of course, you had the Georgia Tech product up there, Jerick McKinnon, who also did pretty well.
Right, exactly.
But speaking of another depth chart battle, as we teased at the very beginning of the show, the Falcons have a new quarterback. And before, I'm sure everybody knows by now, it's obviously not a starting quarterback, although I guess we never know. But Rex Grossman was brought in for a workout, and then ultimately they signed him. And currently they have four quarterbacks on the roster with, obviously, Grossman, T.J. Yates, Sean Renfrey, and Matt Ryan. Well, we know they just signed Grossman, so for the most part, even though he's not playing this weekend, that was announced earlier today as well. Really, we've said for about a year that we don't understand why T.J. Yates is on this roster, but you actually said that you've heard some rumblings that Renfrey could be the odd man out here.
Well, you know, I mean, there's a possibility. With four quarterbacks on and Yates already commanding history as a starter, I mean, the only person there at that point would be Renfrey, who has not had an opportunity to start. However, I like him at quarterback. I think his numbers have proven themselves. I think if you get into a situation, as we were speaking of earlier, in the end zone with a lot of injuries, he has worked more with the second and the third group consistently, as well as shown his ability to work with the first group. I think that he should be elevated to two, in my personal opinion. I think the kid, I think he knows the offense well, and he's proven himself to me. However, again, we're talking about contracts, so we won't know until the end. You know, maybe Rex has just brought it as just something to talk about. Who knows? But again, I don't see the season being started with Ryan Yates and Grossman as three. I mean, I don't see it. Not with the history. I would be shocked to see that as their lineup with Renfrey playing so well.
Yeah, I would too. And if they get rid of Renfrey, I feel like he'll get picked up possibly within an hour of hitting the waiver wire.
Oh, yes. I most definitely feel that he has proven himself as a two in the league, no question. I think he's worthy of a two spot for sure.
Well, and to me, as long as T.J. Yates is on the roster, Matt Ryan knows that his job will never be in jeopardy. And not that Renfrey's at a point where he could take over the starting job, but if Matt Ryan were to go down for a game and know that he's going to miss a game or part of a game, he doesn't have to look over his shoulder and think, gosh, that guy could take over and possibly take my job down the road. He looks at, nothing personal to T.J. Yates, but I feel like it's a safety blanket. As long as he's there, Matt Ryan knows nothing's going to happen. And, of course, Grossman was brought in because of his familiarity with Shanahan's offense and the fact that he's ran it before. So you bring him in, you really don't have to teach him a whole lot. He already knows most of it. You teach him a few bits and pieces of terminology, and you pretty much have your number two or number three ready to go.
Yeah, but the question is, with that being said, how well did he play in that system? And that's what you have to also go back and look at. I mean, was he very effective as a quarterback when he was in Shanahan's system like that? So now the question is, yes, he knows the terminology. The learning curve is small, if not almost non-existent, but how well did he operate as a starter when he had that position?
Well, it's a complicated answer to that. When he ran that system, they were in Washington. Obviously, Washington did not have the offensive weapons nor offensive line that Atlanta has currently. But given his numbers, it looked like he didn't know it so well. But, you know, I guess given his execution and mechanics, if you were to break it down without looking at you know, completion stats, he understands it pretty well. He does get it. Him and Shanahan, I believe, are friends, and this was kind of the lifeline reach out. I'm sure at some point, Dan Quinn's always about competition, so at some point he said, you know, maybe I like or don't like the way these quarterbacks are playing. Is there somebody I can bring in to push the competition level up? To which Kyle Shanahan probably said, absolutely, Rex is sitting out there. He knows my system. You could bring him in, and he can automatically start competing.
Well, we shall see. Because, you know, again, him coming so late to the team as they get ready for the season and some injuries go down, I mean, is that relationship there with those receivers, will it be there fast enough for him to step in if he needed to, if they decide to sign him and let Yates go and or let Ripley go?
If I was the Falcons, I think this is how I would play it. To start this week's game, since Grossman is not going to play, I don't know that I have Matt Ryan even dress out for this game, honestly. But I have T.J. Yates started. I have him play with the ones. I have the ones play their butts off and make him look like $1 million. And then after the game's over, I let the other 31 teams know that in case they would like the services of Mr. Yates, I'm only a phone call away. And I see what I can get for him. If you can even get a late-round draft pick, I think you move him. You keep Grossman as your number three. You move Renfrey up to your number two. And not only did you get something for nothing pretty much, but you've increased the competition level to where Matt Ryan will always kind of have a fire behind him so he keeps playing hard.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that when you look at why Vic was brought into Pittsburgh, you know, it's no question that Roethlisberger knows that Vic can step in and has been proving himself as a starter for the last couple of years. Although he's been a journeyman the last couple of years. However, mm-hmm. He can come in and come in, and he still has the respect of the league and the respect of the players. So I think that's the one thing that has been missing from Atlanta, that one position has not been challenged as well as I think it should be. I think that it should always be someone there waiting, if you will, to take his opportunity to play at the elite position of quarterback. So I think, you know, that makes a difference, and I think whether Matt Ryan wants to admit it or not, I think he realizes that Renfrey, although he won't be a starter by no means because of the money that they're paying him to play, he knows that, you know, if something happens, that young man has proven himself with some numbers and probably is ready to go.
Yeah, and I'm just looking up the before I make my next statement, I want to make sure I got I don't guess they're going to give me how old Matt Ryan is. I feel like he's about 32. Does that sound about right?
That sounds somewhere around the ballpark.
So in NFL standards, probably looking between 4 and 6 peak years left for Matt Ryan, correct?
Depending on, you know, if he gets injured or whatever comes out of it, yeah.
Barring an injury, you know, we're talking near perfect health, probably between 4 and 6 quality years.
Correct.
I would almost suggest, and this is looking way too far ahead, a lot further than I ever like to look ahead as far as this, I would almost say that maybe second, third, fourth roundish next year, they look into a quarterback that they could mold to take over when Matt's done.
Yeah, I could see that coming. They don't have anything there. They don't have anything
right
there for him.
They got a couple relief pitchers, pretty much. They don't have a starter, in my opinion.
Correct.
And Renfrey could be that guy to bridge you between Matt Ryan and the next franchise guy, but, I mean, he may not be either. It's just, it goes back to, we haven't got to see him play enough to know if he can do it.
Right. And again, you know, hopefully he'll get a lot more time in this last preseason game where you can see that.
Yeah, maybe so. But like I said, hopefully T.J. Yates gets a majority of the snaps so that other teams feel like they can't go on without having him on their roster, and Atlanta is able to possibly get that pick next year that could be the next quarterback. Who knows?
It'd be interesting to see what they do with it.
Now, of course, now that I've let the cat out of the bag on that, the other 31 teams are going to block Arthur Blank's number for the next month probably. or at least at least maybe Scott Pioli's or Thomas Dimitrov or something. But it leads us into our last question of the night here, and I look forward to hearing Reggie's answer in a couple of weeks on this because I think he'll be a little bipartisan on it, if I ask him to be at least. Based off everything we know so far, injuries, opportunity, all that kind of stuff, and just the kind of up and down that's already been this offseason, who do you think wins this division as of right now?
You know what? This has always been a tough division to call. Look at just last year alone.
Right.
and the similar record based on injury and the things that you just mentioned that made the ingredients of a very interesting and fulfilling year in this division. Right now, without anybody playing a regular season game, I would have to say the team that you need to look out for, really look out for, this year is going to be Tampa. I think Winston is something about this young man. This is something about his level of comfort right now in Tampa. Cam is going to depend on how well he can hold up. You know, he still was kind of beat up and battered and bruised from the accident last year. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays itself out. Atlanta, they're under a new head coach. It's a rising sun in Atlanta right now. New Orleans, they've had to make some adjustments. How has that helped or hurt them right now? So the division is still up for grabs, but right now I just want to go with a team that no one expects to be in the hunt early. And I think that team is going to be Tampa right now. I think Tampa is going to surprise a lot of people. I think Winston is going to play a lot better than people could have ever imagined. I think he's going to be what Tampa, what Cam is to Carolina right now. And I think that's going to be that one thing that changes it for them. He has some good receivers down there. He has some big targets to throw to. I watched the preseason game that they had the other night, just watching the replays. He's very comfortable with the offense. He's a smart kid, and he makes some very veteran-type decisions now with the football that is quite impressive for me. So I think Tampa, I'm telling people, watch out for Tampa right now. Really keep your finger on the pulse of Tampa right now. I think they are going to be the team that's going to surprise some people or really put some teams on their heels. I think everybody in the division will be on their heels when they play Tampa this year.
Wow, you might be swaying my thought here. I think maybe we've hung out a little too much. You're starting to make some big statements like I'm usually pretty guilty of. But, yeah, I absolutely agree on Winston because, I mean, you see him in college, and it's kind of like Johnny Manziel. He was immature. Made a lot of childish decisions, and he knows that. But, I mean, it's part of being in college. We all live and learn. But it seems like he's grown up really quickly. And I watched that same game you're talking about. I've watched their first two preseason games. Watched actually the first one a couple times. his mechanics remind me a little bit of Cam, and I agree on all the points you made. He gives me a little bit of a Warren Moon vibe, too, as far as just, like you said, the comfort level, doesn't run unless he has to, where Cam can sometimes take off because he wants to. But he's so comfortable, it's like nothing rattles him. He's almost a Peyton or a Brady without, you know, the accolades and the long career. He might as well have a recliner back there sometimes. He looks like he's, you know, he could take a nap. He's so comfortable. But I would have given the division this year. I had pretty much had it planned out in my head, thinking about it all summer. I was going to give it to the New Orleans Saints. I felt like everybody thinks they're rebuilding when they're just changing focus. They're using their strengths and utilizing those, and they're downplaying their weaknesses. But because of Junior Gallette still acting like a kid and being dumb with some of his decisions and him moving on, obviously he just tore his Achilles. He's out the rest of the year for Washington. But when you take your top pass rusher and really the only guy that was getting a lot of pressure on people and you put him on a different team, I don't think New Orleans is in the mix anymore. And thanks to Cam's number one weapon being out, you can't give it to Carolina. So as much as I would like to say Tampa's going to be back, I think right now, barring an absolute, you know, knock on wood disaster, I think this is Atlanta's division this year. And if they can hold off Tampa, which they could surge, you never know. Tampa's either boom or bust this year. But they got so many new moving parts, we're going to have to wait on it. But I got Atlanta winning this right now.
Okay. I can see Atlanta being the forerunner for what they were able to pull off at the end of the season and some of the things that they have in their arsenal of players and receivers and things of that nature. But, again, I think Tampa, it's just something very scary about Tampa right now.
Uh-huh.
And not just Winston, but the team as a whole. I think they're realizing what the good teams know it takes to win. They don't care how they're going to get it done, just as long as they do it. And when you see that in a young, they're having fun. That's a huge difference. They're having fun. I think you're going to see a lot of closer games between Tampa and Atlanta than you will between New Orleans, who's the rival this year.
Yeah. I think
Tampa's going to really push a lot of people. I think Tampa's going to really push a lot of people this year. And I think having a coach like Lovie Smith there, someone that Winston respects, he's going to listen to, he's going to manage the game, he's not going to put him in a lot of bad situations, he's going to take his time, and they're going to just make you play them all the way through four quarters of football versus them trying to beat you in the first half of a football game or three quarters of a football game. Look for Tampa to put a lot of pressure on because they have a lot of guys that are going to emerge that are names like Smith was last year that you don't see coming yet.
Yeah, and let me just throw out these stats real quick. I happen to find them quick enough. 6'5", 231. 6'5", 230. 6'5", 262. What are those numbers? Those are the height and weight of the top two wide receivers and the top tight end, the starters that Jameis Winston will be throwing to, and Mike Evans, Vincent Jackson, and Austin Seferian Jenkins. They have took an approach that I use on video games, and I've used it successfully. I like tall, fast corners, and I like tall, physical receivers because they're going to win the battle 99 times out of 100. And you take somebody tall and comfortable in the pocket like Winston, somebody who can even break out a run here or there. You know, he's another guy that could do the read option successfully. You give him these big, strong targets, these Calvin Johnson-like receivers out there that can just reach over the top of a small corner. They could really make a push. I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah, I have no favorite in the division.
No, I don't either.
Just from my professional side of things. But if I'm looking at it from a very, very if I'm really critiquing the division, I just think that Tampa is going to be – because I watched them last year. They were only missing a quarterback from last year.
Probably making
a huge difference in what they turned out. So now that team has taken on the philosophy of Coach Smith now, and the only thing they were missing – was the quarterback, and now they have their quarterback. They're going to have fan favorites without, you know, out the wazoo because now not only do they have Miami, Jacksonville, and Tampa, but you have a product of those big three, if you will, you know, the Florida States, and Miami, now home in Tampa, home
yep.
in Florida. So now that's going to make a huge difference in how all the, and it's going to bring about a lot of in-state competition as well. So look for Jacksonville to do some good things. They were not bad last year. They were young, but they were very competitive. You know, look at Miami, same thing. They were young on the defensive side of the ball, but now they're going to be very competitive, added the elements that they need now. So this is, I mean, I think all three of those teams in Florida are going to surprise in their divisions, to be quite honest with you. But I think as we were speaking of the NFC South, as we were talking about, I think that Tampa is going to push everybody this year. Everybody's going to be pushed by Tampa. So they better be prepared to play them or you're going to get embarrassed. I'm just going to be honest. I just feel that Tampa is that team this year. And I mean, just hands down. We'll see. The season is about to kick off here soon. We're going to have our answers pretty quick.
Well, and another thing on them is Lovie Smith now has another year that he's gotten rid of his players that aren't necessarily in his scheme, and he's brought in more of his own guys and built the defense the way he likes to run it. And like you said about Jacksonville, they may have been young. You know, Tampa may have been young on defense, and that may have been part of the issues in previous years, but not only have they matured together. So they could literally be the surprise. I had them counted out a couple months ago, but now that I've seen them play a little bit and the stuff you're saying right there, this division is right back to it's a race to 8 or 9 wins. If you get 8 or 9 wins, you're probably going to win the division.
I agree with you. I think I'm going to tell you who Tampa looks like to me. Tampa reminds me of Seattle. They're going to look a lot like Seattle about two or three years ago.
Yep.
I really see them being that type of team.
Right as Seattle was turning the corner. Not when they made that first Super Bowl, the year before that, when you started to see everything slowly come together.
Correct. I think this time next year, you better not count out Tampa.
Absolutely so. Do you have anything you want to add before we get out of here?
No, I'm good.
Yeah, I think we thoroughly went over everything and then some, and then we had some good discussions here. Hopefully all our listeners are as confused about who's going to win this year as we still are. But, I think that's going to do it for us. And, Coach, appreciate you being back on with us.
Oh, absolutely. It's always fun, Jeremy.
And like I said, we'll play it by ear for next year because I know I'll be at the game. Obviously, my affinity for that team from Baltimore, I can't miss this game. Hoping to get up pretty close should be fun. I think Reggie may be at the game. I think he may be out on assignment doing something. But we'll play it by ear for what happens next week, and obviously we'll let the fans know. But if not, obviously everybody will be in anticipation to hear from us in a couple weeks.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to the season.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a good season. But for the Coats, I am Jeremy the Impact York. We will see you guys either next week or the week after. Thanks for joining us.
By that much.